Hey, welcome to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I'm Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And I'm saying this as if we've been doing this for weeks.
Or years.
But we haven't. We've been off for a few weeks, which has just been weird.
Yes, very.
2 weeks ago, I was at a girls' baseball tournament out in Illinois. Last week you were gone, so like I guess it's summer and we're kind of all over the place right now, but it's still weird sitting here and having to like do a show.
Well, yeah, it's a lot different here in the summer as we wait for school to begin and football season to start.
Yep.
So, you know, because we do focus a lot on Bedford sports and there aren't many sports happening right now other than some preseason practices starting up.
Yeah, it's crazy. So we were out there the other day at the SAU field taking batting practice and thinking, we have plenty of time, nobody's going to be around, and at about 5:05, a car pulls up, and we said, well, what's going on? And I thought,
this is supposed to be a private batting practice session. Who's this?
There should be nobody here. And I look, and it's a guy and a kid, and for a second, I just kind of dismissed it. I was like, oh, maybe it's Billy Chapman. Maybe Billy's just coming out here, whatever. Like, I didn't even think about it. And then another car pulls up. It was like Field of Dreams. Then another car pulls up. Then I'm like, wait a second. So finally, there are two coaches out there in the outfield. I say, hey, what time's practice start? They say 5:45. Okay. And by 5:32, the field was full of people.
Wow.
And we were, so it was me and Maggie and a girl from Amherst named Beth Greenwood, who has done a bunch of workouts with the U.S. Women's National Baseball Team. And Beth just got back from Texas, where she was one of 34 invited to try out for this team that's going to play in a tournament down in Mexico. She can't play in the tournament down in Mexico because she's playing in another women's tournament in Korea. So
That'd be a tough commute.
I know, seriously. So like Beth's hitting lasers, and I'm trying to pitch Beth inside thinking, all right, she's going to, I need her to hit everything to left.
Because people are over in right field.
People are in right field. I throw one away. She hits a rocket to right. And I said, all right, we're done. And then we went to the cage. But it is all football all the time. Like, these are 5 through 8 year old kids, and they're practicing 3 days a week.
Yeah.
Like, no joke.
No, it's go time.
Right. And the coaches are all over it. They take it seriously, which is more than I can ever say about myself about anything, really. But like, hey, they're ready to go, and the kids are ready to go too, and it's a lot of fun. So, I don't know. So, yeah, it is football season. It is, we are nearing fantasy football time. Are we really that close? I don't even, do you know when the NFL season starts?
Well, yeah, this is the second week of the preseason coming up this weekend. So, I think the first NFL games are around September 5th.
Okay.
That weekend after, that Thursday after Labor Day.
So we're going to need to do some fantasy football drafting.
In August.
Before we get into that.
Yes.
Which that will be an important thing. It's weird when you look at the NFL because it feels like it never stops.
Yeah, they do a great job of it, of spreading out the news. And I mean, I think the NBA probably has trumped them a little bit in the last couple of years just because of the free agency madness.
Yeah,
and the summer league, so you get real games in the off season where you're watching players who are going to be in the NBA.
Well, you are, but yeah.
Well, lots of people are. I mean, you know, Zion's first game in Vegas was sold out.
Right. Well, I may have mentioned it on this show. I don't remember. I remember going to games at, it may have been like Los Alamitos High School in the summer league way back when, or maybe it was in Long Beach, and you would go and there would be a couple hundred people in the gym, but we'd go because LeBron James is playing. And it just wasn't, I mean, this was, I don't know, close to 20 years ago. It just wasn't as big of a deal then as it clearly is now. Not to mention they're also playing it in Vegas.
Yeah. And they've got two stadiums, two courts right next to each other under the same roof. And it's all NBA teams now. All 32 teams are there. It's gotten huge. You know, the only thing that's trending in a negative direction is that some of the top players aren't playing much for fear of injury. Like Zion played 9 minutes
right,
in the first game, bumped his knee, and so they shut him down for the rest of the summer league. And a lot of the players and agents are intimating that this might become a trend. So that's one thing to watch. But yeah, it's yeah, you know, so the NFL doesn't have those off-season games with the incoming players.
That would be bad.
But now you have the preseason, so you get to see guys like Kyler Murray out there, and he has played in both preseason games. And, yeah, it's right around the corner.
Yeah, it has been interesting to see the NFL and the various new offenses that are coming in and players that are getting playing time and are not getting playing time. I mean, we are really, truly – the NFL has sort of managed this 365-day news thing very well, where it just hasn't – it hasn't taken a break. And now this – the exhibitions where – I don't know if you saw this, and this wasn't on our list of things to talk about. The guy who basically Willie Mays hazed the Cleveland Browns.
In what way?
He had played in junior college and just sort of showed up.
Yes, I did hear about this.
Okay. And he has a hyphen in his last name, and I can't remember what
it was. Is that why they signed him?
Probably. But no, the reason they signed him is he came out. It was like, seriously, it was like Willie Mays hazed. Like, they must have moved his bed into the parking lot at training camp. He woke up while they were running sprints and all of a sudden ran a 4.38 in his pajamas, for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, he basically slept outside, right? Yeah. And was like knocking on the door saying, give me a chance.
Yeah, kind of, give me a chance. I need to be there. And now he ran a 4.38 and now he's there. And it's kind of the sort of stuff that a lot of us dreamed of, you know, some of us more realistically than others. But you look at a guy like that, okay, now, as if the Cleveland Browns needed any more hype or buzz to go along with this offseason, now they have this guy.
Yeah, that's fun. Those are great stories. And it's like the minor league pitcher, or the pitcher that the Oakland A's signed, who was throwing 96 at the speedball game at one of the Major League Baseball parks.
Right.
Did you hear about that?
Yes. He was, well, he had been at a major... It was such a bizarre story because, like, this guy has these peaks and valleys in his existence. Like, he throws, whatever, 96 at a Mariners game, maybe, last year. And then somebody is interested in signing him, and he proceeds to go and get hit by a car. And then he comes back, and then he's throwing 96 at a Nashville Sounds game. And then the A's sign him, and there we are.
Right. They'd been keeping their eye on him. And sure enough, he shows up and lights up the radar gun in a ballpark, and he finally gets his contract.
So this guy for the Browns, Damon Sheehy Giuseppe, did not even play high school football, talked his way into a tryout he was not invited to, and was sleeping outside because he could not afford otherwise. How do you go from not playing high school football to thinking that you should be on an NFL roster?
I guess if you know you can run a 4.3, then it's just a matter of you got to show the speed and convince people that you can fit in somehow and somehow, some way, use that speed to your advantage.
Yeah, he says he didn't make the team in community college and began running track, stopped running track, and then started showing up to summer football workouts at another junior college, Phoenix College. Became an All-American in 2016, leading the nation in kick return yards and touchdowns, and then heard of an NFL scouting workout, ran into Alonzo Highsmith, who is the vice president of player personnel, and he was not invited to this thing. Looked up Alonzo Highsmith to find out what he looked like, which, I mean, it's hilarious. Flew from Arizona to Miami, acted like he knew Highsmith, and basically wound up running a 4.38. I mean, I guess if you show up and, you know, what's it going to take? 5 seconds.
Right.
Like, okay, this guy's a pretender. He just ran a 5.1. Or this guy's the real thing. He ran a 4.38. If you can run sub 4.4 and you're not a tiny person, and in some cases, even if you are, you're going to get a chance.
Right. And because you have to be built to run a 4.3.
Yes. Like,
even if you're short, okay, he's going to be muscular and he could be a scat back, or he could be a punt returner, he could run the go route as a wide receiver.
Right.
There's a place for him if he's an athlete, and he obviously is if he can run a 4.3.
Well, not even that. If he can catch a punt, like, that's not an easy skill. Like, that's not like, you know, we've all seen it on Jackass on MTV, like Johnny Knoxville and them trying to catch a punt and deal with a punt return team. Like, you're sitting there, like, you're staring down the barrel of a rifle, because you have, for all intents and purposes, 9 or 10 guys who are coming at you, and you're sitting there watching an object in the air, trying to snag the object out of the air and avoid the guys. Like, I think that is an underrated, or the difficulty of that skill is really underrated.
Yeah, because you're also, you've got all your pads on. The ball is spinning in a strange way.
Uh-huh.
You've got wind. And we've all seen lots of guys in the NFL who are supposed to have good hands, wide receivers, drop that ball, muff it.
It's a doink
it
off the face. Yeah,
multiple times a season. So that's a real skill.
So, yeah, he returned a touchdown in a preseason game. And
yeah, he got his chance, and then off he goes. He just beats everybody down the field.
May we all get our chance, and may we all take advantage of it when the opportunity is presented or presents itself. So.
Well, it reminds me of your story when you went to Kansas City.
What?
And you talked your way into an interview. And you got the job.
That's it. Sometimes you just get the right person on the right day.
You just get to the location, talk to the person who matters.
And sometimes somebody says, well, yeah, I mean, you know, and I don't, it's funny, like a story like this, the one about Damon Sheehy Giuseppe, you look at that and you say that type of thing shouldn't still be able to happen.
Right.
Like we talk.
Isn't that what they have scouts for?
Right. I talk to my kids all the time about the things that we used to be able to get away with way back when, whether it was toilet papering somebody's house or whether it was shaving cream in a mailbox or like any number of things that you would do just to bug people. And I mean, it was usually friends and you knew that it was going to be done right back to you, but you can't get away with that stuff anymore because you get the wrong person on the wrong day and there's a Ring doorbell that's videoing you and off on the Facebook it goes and there's a video and who are these hooligans out there toilet papering my house and I had to be somewhere early in the morning and now I had to clean it up. Like the days of like really good pranks appear to be over because you can't really prank somebody because chances are somebody's going to have a camera and next thing you know, like we don't really laugh at things anymore. You wind up in jail. Like we're done with right. Ha ha ha, this is funny. Now yeah. It's like now it's all over Facebook and I'm wagging my finger at you and you should feel shame. And the same thing goes with the internet. Like, okay, this guy's name is on this thing. Somebody somewhere does a check and goes, this guy doesn't show up on it's not like there are 1,000 Damon Sheehy Giuseppes kicking around. Like there's one.
Right.
Like, you Google it and you go, man, it's a wash. Or if you're Alonzo Highsmith, you go, okay, let's take a chance. Like, he's here. He cares. He flew across the country. You never know. I don't know. In my case, I wound up sitting in the interview or I wound up booking time on a schedule that I shouldn't have been able to book. And once I got to know the receptionist better when I was actually working for the team, I understood exactly why it happened.
Why?
Because she was a little bit flighty. So she had the combination of I'm a little bit flighty and I'm not quite paying attention to exactly what's going on. She had that. And the general manager at the time had a bad habit of saying to people, yeah, no problem. Call my office. So once I'd worked with the team, I knew exactly why it happened because this guy, Adam, used to regularly say to people, just call my office, we'll get it scheduled. So you find that out after the fact, and I played into those two strengths. And
right.
Valerie, who's answering the phone, just goes, oh, Adam must have seen him.
Oh, yeah, there's time
there,
here on the schedule. Sure,
there must be a reason.
I'll just mark it down. This will work out.
Come by here.
Now I'm done with this task.
Right, exactly.
So that's great.
Now I can go and, you know, like...
I just scheduled another meeting in an open time slot. Pat
right,
on the back.
I've done my job. It's funny. I worked for, and I never even thought about it until just now. In the time that I was in minor league baseball, I worked for five teams, maybe, I think. And two of those teams had dance teams, like cheerleading squads.
Wow, minor league baseball teams.
Yeah. When you think about it, I can't think of any other minor league teams anywhere that have dance teams.
Yeah, I played for four, and I don't think I ever saw one.
Homer Road.
Home
I
road.
Never saw anybody with any kind of a spirit squad, dance team, anything.
Yeah.
It's not something that typically accompanies baseball. But to get back to that, Valerie, who was the receptionist, was also in charge of the T-Bones dance team.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, we had, in Inland Empire, we had a benefactor for the dance team who was a member of the San Manuel Band of American Indians. Native Americans. I don't know what they referred to as at that point in time, but he was the San Manuel and decided, hey, it's going to be better for the family experience if you guys have a dance team, and he paid for it. So that was the kind of the catch there. But I've never, in all the stadiums I've ever been to, I've never seen it ever anywhere else, like leagues across the country.
Right.
And I happen to work for two of them. And I don't know, minor league baseball and dance teams, there was something kind of oil and vinegary about the whole thing. Like there was, yeah, I felt like I spent a lot of time navigating conflicts between dance team and front office staff and players that should have probably been regulated better.
Yes.
But, you know, and who would it fall to? Maybe me. I don't know. But I was there for baseball.
Right.
I didn't know the first thing and obviously still don't. So anyway, we have seriously digressed. So you talk about hard skills. Returning a punt in the NFL, not an easy skill. Pitching in the major leagues, not an easy skill.
Nope.
Yet, for whatever reason, now in baseball, and we haven't talked about any of this stuff from the last couple weeks, because of you're playing with a 25-man roster, but everybody likes this really deep bullpen, now you start having position players playing pitching and pitchers playing positions.
Yeah. It's happening more and more, and one of the reasons it's happening is because the teams and the managers are more conservative with the starting pitchers, so now they pull them out sooner.
Yep.
Now you have to use more of your relievers on a daily basis. They get tired, and then all of a sudden you have to figure out what to do.
Right, and well, then it also becomes where you get into a blowout, and why am I going to make Joe long reliever, and that's another thing. The long reliever concept really just doesn't exist anymore, which is weird. But why am I going to make, I don't know, I'm trying to think of some random long reliever from years past and I got nothing, Bob Stanley. Why am I going to make Bob Stanley go out there when the team's losing by 15 runs? And why don't I just grab Roman Quinn, my center fielder, to go out there and throw, or Stevie Wilkerson to go out there and throw? And there are also times when you get into extra innings where it becomes strategic and, all right, I like the matchup here, but I don't like the matchup there. And so now I'm flexing guys back and forth. And I don't know if you saw the Phillies game from a few weeks ago where Vince Velasquez, left-handed pitcher, for one night became basically the best left fielder in baseball, where he's making diving catches, throwing guys out at home. Like... That's Zach Greinke's dream. Is you're telling me I can run around in the outfield? Like, I don't have to just stand here on this little hill? Like,
well, there are guys like Rick Ankiel.
Right.
Who make the permanent switch one way or the other.
He had to make the switch, though. Like, Rick Ankiel had no real reason to pitch anymore if he couldn't throw strikes.
He was throwing everything to the backstop?
Yeah, no.
That made it tough.
Yeah, Steve Blast disease. But no. But in the case of Velasquez... Then you think about it, who's logical to play outfield? Well, what do pitchers do during batting practice?
They shag flies and throw it in with their strong arm.
They shag BP. That's it. Yeah. So it's what these guys know how to do. And then you have a very learned gentleman from an esteemed Ivy League school that the Yankees threw out yesterday.
Mike Ford.
And now, to his credit, he has a 22.5 major league ERA after posting a 2.88 ERA at Princeton. And something like 280 innings.
Yeah, in his senior year, he was 6-0 with a .93 ERA.
Yeah.
He won the Pitcher of the Year and Batter of the Year in the Ivy League.
He won both.
He won both in the same season.
Okay, wow.
First ever to do that.
Yeah. So where did he get drafted?
I don't know what round it was.
Okay. I mean, with numbers like that, that's pretty impressive. And that kind of falls into the Kyler Murray... It's, you know, the people that can do both that well, that's not fair to the rest of us. The people that can get drafted in the first round baseball and football, probably not fair to the rest of us. But a guy like that, of course, has hit 4 home runs for the Yankees to this point after getting called up from the minors. And the Yankees have been beset by injuries this season, but now they used him on the mound. And I don't know that he will get a repeat trip to the mound.
Probably not, but it's a fun story because I saw him play in college, and I remember, you know, looking at his stats, and the coach told me that he's having a great season, but I didn't look at him and think, oh, he's got a real shot to play in the major leagues because he's not that tall, and he comes from the Ivy League. So you don't see that very often. But he worked his way through the minors for about 7 years, and he's taking advantage of his opening in terms of showing his power. You know, with all these injuries up there, contributing to this incredible amount of home runs that the Yankees are hitting, along with some of the other teams like the Twins that we've talked about. But his best skill, it seems, is power, and he has hit the 4 home runs so far.
It has been interesting to watch, too. Some of the pennant races have gotten good, and now we're at a point where you may have some good teams that aren't making the playoffs. The Mets got red hot, which has been interesting to see, particularly after everybody was saying, you know,
they're going
to
trade Thor.
They're going to trade everybody, and instead they wind up as buyers, and now they're red hot. But are they going to be left on the outside looking in? Because now you have the Braves, who have that young core that has matured altogether, all about at the right time. They have their young core. And then you have the Phillies, who are getting hot at the right time, just swept the Cubs. And in something that Bryce Harper really needed, and I think the Phillies really needed him, they were in the Bob Boone, Greg Luzinski, Mike Schmidt jerseys yesterday, the throwback jerseys, were trailing, I believe, 5-1 going into the ninth, scratched a couple across, had the bases loaded, and Harper went upper deck and walk off. But I'm convinced at some point that they're going to reveal to us that Bryce Harper is actually Will Ferrell.
How? Why is that?
He's just a big goober. like I have no other way. He's just a goofball. Like, it's almost like if Will Ferrell was going to make a baseball movie, he would make a character that's a player who is as corny and as sort of dorky as Bryce Harper is.
The only difference is that Harper is intense when he's swinging the bat. Like, I don't know if Will Ferrell could be that intense for more than about 1 second, and then it's quickly back to humor.
Right. You'd need a body double for him, but it's just like this. He won the home run derby last year, and really all he could say was, oh, wow, wow. Can't you come up with something better? Like, you're just such a – you're like the most charismatic dork. And he did the same thing last night. He's talking about, I wasn't nervous at all when I got up to the plate, bases loaded, trailing by 2. And I looked up in my parents' suite and the lights were out. And so they must have already left. So thanks, Mom and Dad. So, yeah, there we are.
That is fun. But yeah, the NL wildcard race has really gotten tight. So many teams there. You mentioned the Braves and the Phillies. But you've got the Cardinals, you've got, you know, these other teams that are leading that might drop back, the Cubs and Diamondbacks, all these teams within about 5 games that still have a chance, and that's really made the dog days of summer a lot more interesting since they instituted the wild card.
Yeah, it has. Although the really difficult thing is, if you're a Major League Baseball team and you have a chance to get into the wild card, is it worth mortgaging the future to play in that one game? And I guess, you know, that's what I'd like to see, is shorten the season. And I'm not talking by a lot. Shorten the season to 159 games. Like, because the last 3 games of the season really don't matter all that much anyway. And it's not like that makes a gigantic financial difference to the teams. Shorten it to 159 and make the wild card a 3-game playoff. And just have it be something where it's not just a result of one pitcher throwing great or somebody catching lightning in the bottle and you're there. I think, yeah, and people can make the argument, sure, football has, it's a 1-game thing, but for whatever reason, a football game tends to play out entirely differently than a baseball game does or a basketball game does. It would be like playing a basketball wild card 1 game where all it takes is 1 or 2 weird things to happen and all of a sudden the game's out of reach. Whereas with football, it seems like even if you're down at halftime, you can go back, strategize, okay, the second half is a different half.
It would be like playing an NBA game, but only playing a half.
Right.
But yeah, with NFL, I mean, they only play 16 games in the regular season.
Well,
so
understandably,
they're used
so,
to putting like all their eggs into the one basket of the strategy for 60 minutes. Here we go. Let's play. I like the idea of a 3-game wild card because it gives you think the better team is more likely to win when you have more games. Of course, the flip side of that is then the division winners have to wait an extra 3 days. And that, for the Major League Baseball players who've just played six games, seven games a week all summer, that's tough to adjust to, to all of a sudden take 4 days off.
It may be tough to adjust to, but you also get the opportunity to reset your pitching, which then becomes a gigantic advantage. And, you know, and you say that about the division winners, but we haven't had any crazy close division races or many in recent years. So, I mean, the Dodgers, as of right now, are about 830 games ahead.
Right.
And really, like, it would take them, they're 81-42. If they lost every game the rest of the year, they would finish 500. Like, so chances are you're not going to see a ton of Kershaw or Walker Buehler or Ryu that last couple weeks of the season anyway. So, you know, and chances are you're not going to be seeing a lot of the marquee guys the last couple weeks of the season. You'll see the September call-ups getting their opportunity. So,
I think of it more for the hitters, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree that it certainly is a little bit of an advantage. You set that pitching rotation, but in terms of the hitters, you take 4 days off, your timing's off, and so you have to resort to simulated games in practice, which just never, ever approximate the real thing.
Right. Not even close. So that it is challenging. And then that NL Central that you talked about, Cardinals, Cubs, and Brewers, all separated by one game. And the Cubs picked a bad time to have their bullpen absolutely go in the tank. So, you know, we'll see how, I don't know. It should be a last few good weeks of this baseball season that has been, you know, I just, you and I watch it. I hope that people are watching because there is far too much young talent right now and just great players and great quality of play. There's way too much of that for the casual fan to ignore. Like, baseball really is a lot of fun to watch. And the young players are coming at the right time. Cody Bellinger, Mike Trout, Yelich, like, these are just dudes who every time they come up, Harper, even though Harper's hitting about 250, every time they come up, something can happen.
Yeah, the home run race will be exciting with those guys. But speaking of young baseball talent, there was talk of a potential interview this week.
Are we going to do that?
Are we going to do an interview?
Yeah. Do you want to take a break before we do that?
Let's take
back?
A break.
All right, we'll take a break. Come right back. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. And the reason we didn't do the show 2 weeks ago, we talked about this, was the girls' baseball tournament out in Illinois. I wound up broadcasting a handful of games from out there as well, which was a lot of fun to be able to do. One thing that was I didn't know was on my bucket list, but if I was going to retroactively add something, it would be calling a game in which my kid hits a home run, which... And then you go back after the fact and go, oh, it didn't even record.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, I did a perfect game in 2003, too, and that didn't record either.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was just bad. So anyway, anytime anything good happens, I'm not going to record it. But so with that, I have my kid as our guest, Maggie Fox. Welcome to the program.
Hi. What's up?
We're just hanging out here. You know, it's Friday, and people are listening on Saturday, but
this really is a Fox on Sports segment here.
It's Fox and Fox on Sports with Hanson.
This is fun.
So for those who didn't know, you were playing in the Baseball for All National Tournament a couple weeks ago. What's it like playing? I know obviously you play softball, but what's it like playing in an all-girl baseball tournament? You play softball and baseball both, but this is the only thing where it is the game with the small ball with the red stitches, and you're surrounded by girls.
It's nuts. It's really exciting. All the girls there, it's fun to see all the different talent levels and how everybody can play.
So for those who didn't know, where did they have teams in from?
Boston,
yep.
Toronto, California, two teams from California, Chicago.
This is like a trivia question for you. There may be two more.
Hold on.
No, you don't even have to do it. I'll fill it in. New York and Washington, D.C. So it's still starting to expand, too. They have some younger teams from Southern California and Arizona. So it's really, it is starting to grow. For you, obviously, you played baseball this year on the big diamond, the 60-90 diamond.
Yep.
Why is it important for girls to have the opportunity to play baseball with other girls?
It's very important so they can share the love of the game with the other girls that are playing with them, and so they can expand other people's knowledge about girls in baseball and let them know that girls can play and they can play hard.
Awesome. Good answer. We are here with Maggie Fox.
Thank you.
What's that?
I said thank you.
We are here with Maggie Fox, the catcher for the Boston Slammers 13U Red Team that just won the national championship of the Baseball for All tournament. For you, what were some of the most fun things about the trip?
The championship was definitely one of the best highlights of the trip. Scoring 67 runs, that was fun too. The pool was super fun. Well, it's a pool.
But why? Okay, why was it fun though? What was fun about it?
About the pool?
Yeah.
Well, you get to swim and you get to hang out with your teammates.
There you go.
I guess the point, they took a chair, they stuck it in the pool, and they were sitting on the chair.
It's so the team for, I mean, I don't know how much you want to get into where everybody comes from. There are 10 girls on this specific team. The Slammers have 45 in the program, but they have you from New Hampshire. Who else is on the team geographically?
There are two from Vermont. One's Elise, she's on my team, and one's Maddie, she's on the blue team. There's two from Arizona. One is Angie, she's on my team, and one's Shelby, she's on the blue team. And there's Amira, she's on my team, but she's from Chicago. And then there's everyone else is from the Boston area.
So to give a little more context for this tournament that folks are just learning about, at this Baseball for All National Tournament, there were five age groups, right? The 9U team, 11U, 13U, 15U, 18U. And Maggie, you were on the Boston Slammers red team that won the 13U national championship, right?
Yep.
And my understanding is that you guys went 6-0. You gals went 6-0.
I still mess it up, so yeah.
And Lauren broadcast five of those games.
Yeah.
Apparently, you know, optional whether he was recording it or not, but what was it like to know that you were on the field and he was broadcasting games, because you've known him as a broadcaster for a long time?
It was definitely weird. It was definitely weird knowing that he was going to broadcast the games. Seeing him as I was catching, like turning around to get the ball, he'd be right there. I was hitting and I would step out of the box and I would just wave at him. That was fun.
Well, it's always fun to have that support from a parent.
What were you going to say about the umpires? I'm curious.
The umpires were always like, oh, who is that back there? I'm like, oh, that's my dad.
It was interesting, too, because I'd say something about whether it was a call that was made that, you know, you have to be careful because you're sitting 15 feet behind the umpire. So you don't want to, you can't really truly question a call, nor like, I don't know. This tournament was really interesting. And Maggie, obviously you have played a ton of games this year, but this was far and away the least arguing I saw with umpires in any tournament or any game, and kind of the easiest going umpires that we saw all year.
These were easily the best umpires I've had all year, all season.
So the umpires for the Baseball for All tournament. Do you want to talk about, and I'm throwing like curveballs at you. Want to talk about the umpires and whether they're getting paid or not getting paid or any of that sort of stuff?
I don't know if they're getting paid, but they did a great job. And there was probably about five male umpires and the rest were female. There were three umpires in particular that we had that were very, very good. One is Paul, one was Janet, I believe,
yep.
And one is Kathy.
Yep.
Kathy we had for the Maria Pepe tournament where we won that championship also. She's very good umpire. Paul was very good too, and Janet was a great umpire. Like, I would definitely have all three of them again.
Yeah, they pay the umpires for the games. They don't pay their travel. And so Paul's from Stoughton, Mass. So he's flying in. He's paying his own way to go. Janet's from down in Georgia. She paid her own way to go. Kathy's from Connecticut. She paid her own way to go. So, like, you have these people. But it was weird for me broadcasting the games and you say something that you're interpreting that just happened, and the umpires come back and give you clarification between innings.
Oh, that's nice.
It's crazy.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. They'd come back and say, oh, yeah, so this, it was because of that. You're like, cool. And you're not taking a break. So,
and the Maria Pepe tournament was in New Jersey, right? So these tournaments are happening all over the country. And that's a sign of a great catcher, Maggie, when you know the umpires' names and you're seeing them all over the country. So it's got to be a lot of fun. But I want to get back to some of these on-field highlights because, as we mentioned, your team went 6-0. I understand that you were the winning pitcher in one of the games. You struck out six. You also spent a lot of time behind the plate. What was it like to be moving around the diamond and have these six games packed into, what was it, 3 days? It's a lot of baseball.
Oh, it is a lot of baseball, but it was a lot of good baseball, good teammates. Some of the highlights, so very good left-handed power hitter, Ellie. She lives in the Boston area. She plays center for us, and she pitches. One of the games, she threw someone out from deep center, like no cut, no nothing.
You were catching on that play?
Yeah, I was catching on that play. That was a great throw. Like no hop either.
Wow, she just threw it to you on the fly.
This kid's a beast.
Yeah,
like she can. She played down at Boston Latin. She played softball, varsity softball as a seventh grader. Yeah, she can play.
she's nuts. And then we have Elise from Vermont, who in the game to decide if we were going to the championship, she had 14 strikeouts through a complete game. I think she had two hits against her. That was nuts. Angie Valenzuela, she lives in Arizona. For the last game, how many strikeouts did she have? Do you know?
I don't know how many strikeouts she had. She was just dealing, though.
And, yeah, she was dealing.
And these are girls who at this point are 13 years old who are playing on a full-size diamond, like a major league-size diamond. And because this is 13U, they are moving back to a 50-70. So how did that affect, like in the case of Elise, how did that affect your pitch calling during the game?
I definitely did not call any off-speed pitch because she throws hard. And if the girls, they couldn't catch up to her throwing 65-70, then they couldn't catch up to her. Well, they would be able to catch up to her like with their off-speed pitches. So it was probably good to just stick to fastball the whole game. And I guess it worked.
It appears that it did. We're with Maggie Fox of the 13U Boston Slammers that just won the national championship in the Baseball for All tournament out in Rockford, Illinois a couple weeks back. So for you, how big of a baseball fan are you?
That's a great question. One of the biggest baseball fans you could probably find.
And for those of us who know you and have seen you around town, we know who your favorite team is.
Oh yeah, definitely. Kansas City Royals all the way.
And that is a loyal fan when you're looking at it, and the Royals are sitting 43-78, 30 games out as of right now. But I wasn't supposed to remind you of that. Who's your favorite Royal?
Salvador Perez. Even though he's injured right now, but still.
We're still loyal to Salvi.
Yeah.
And then who's your favorite non-Royals player?
Jackie Robinson, because he's just trailblazer in baseball, just how it is. Like, nuts. That guy was nuts.
Yes. Well, and the number you wear, obviously, is his number.
Yes.
So
he's one of the ultimate trailblazers, and you're part of a trailblazing program, Baseball for All.
That was really fun.
So we're curious, what's next for you with baseball?
So I have some few more girls baseball tournaments that are coming up. I'm going to continue playing with the Slammers. I have pony baseball in the fall and thunder baseball, travel baseball.
It's all right. So while we're here, I'm going to give a quick plug for Manchester Pony because I can. If you have a kid who's 12 or 13 who's done with Little League, and they're looking for somewhere to play that's not the full-size diamond. The Pony Field is in Manch. It's 54 feet from home plate to the pitcher's mound and 80-foot bases. So it's like that nice level between. And it gives the kids a great opportunity to sort of acclimate to the bigger field. But if you're listening to the show right now and you have, and it is a, do you enjoy the Pony League?
Oh, it's such a great league. They do a great job.
It's really a lot of fun. A guy named Steve Fosman and his son Cam, Jeff Pileski. There are a number of Manchester guys who really work hard to make sure.
Kim Lambert too.
They all make sure the kids have an opportunity to play the game. And it's kids from Manch, but it's open to anybody. We had a kid from Mass on the team last year. So if you are looking for somewhere for your son or daughter to play in the fall, look up Manchester Pony or Manchester Colt. I know a lot of Bedford players have played or are signed up for the year, but it is a fun opportunity for the kids to get out and just keep playing and keep learning the game. And that's, you know, that's the most important thing. And then the other thing is with the national organization, Baseball for All, you can go to their website, baseballforall.com. If you're interested in learning more about it, with that too, their national tournament, do you know where it's going to be next year?
Is it like Maryland or something?
Yeah, they're doing it at the Ripken, the Ripken Baseball Facility down in Aberdeen, Maryland.
Oh, so excellent.
So, yeah, they're moving on up in the world. They had 350 girls this year from all around the country playing, and the next logical step for them to grow it was to go to a big facility like that. So there they go. So awesome. Well, Maggie Fox, thank you for joining us.
Nice talking to you guys.
Hey, great job.
Thank you.
We will I'll be home soon.
Okay.
Congratulations, Maggie. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
All right, you are listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. it's fun to interview my kid.
Yeah, that was fun.
She did well. I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, and she was, you know, modest with the description of the on-field highlights. You know, looking at the write-ups on the Baseball for All website, she had an outstanding tournament. I mean, I doubt there were too many players out there who hit a home run, won a game as a pitcher, and then did well as a catcher, and not to mention was on the team that won the championship. So she had a great, great tournament out there.
She had a lot of fun. You know, sometimes, and we all are guilty of it, like sometimes you figure something out with a game and it becomes like your favorite toy. And I just need to keep doing this. So they were in the semifinal game, they were in the last pool play game against the team that they played in the semis. And they tried to run on her. Her favorite toy is the pitch out. Like, okay, if I think somebody's going to run, and not to mention on those 70-foot bases, like, you get a 10-foot lead and a decent jump, like stealing your sleep.
Right.
And they're turf fields. So you get a kid like Elise, who's 5'9". Elise has sort of mastered the art of, Elise could probably slide from 20 feet out. It's like just a slip and slide. She just goes. And so the San Francisco Bay Sox first inning sent somebody, call a pitch out, and she was quick and boom, out. And that kind of shut down their running game. And I didn't really give it any thought because I think the final in that one was 15-5. I didn't really give that a whole lot of thought at the time, but I had a handful of people come up and say, no, that played a role in that game, but it also played a role in the next game. I hadn't thought through it because I'm sitting there focusing on the nuts and bolts of what's going on. But, you know, it's just it's fun when – like you see the quality of play and you know, okay, if I'm catching and I'm throwing down to a shortstop who is just sure-handed, I don't have to think about it. Like,
that's a great combo. And you call it a toy from Maggie's perspective, but the other teams would look at it as a weapon. Well, and they would see that, and I think it makes a lot of sense where they say, oh, okay, they've got this catcher who will call a pitch out and then make a great throw and shut down a running game. We need to keep that in mind and strategize with that in mind.
Right. Well, you need to be calculated about calling pitch outs. You can't do it every time somebody's got somebody on base because, okay, now the hitters are walking in with a 1-0 count every time, like if you're pitching out. But so you need to be somewhat judicious about doing it. That's kind of the aspect of this is a you know, okay, there maybe we were calling for pitch outs at other points that we shouldn't have been. But the idea that, hey, I can do this, and by doing this, now I'm going to shut down a run game. It's fun. And
that's huge.
It's fun to watch the mental gymnastics that go into all that, too. So, speaking of gymnastics, my little one got to go to a Royals game and was on Fox Sports Midwest holding up a sign that said, I flew all the way from New Hampshire to watch the Royals win.
Ha, all right.
In typical Royal fashion, they did not win.
Hey, it's the spirit.
Still got on TV. So, all right. So now to, I guess, what I would call the dark side of Little League, the districts and or districts, regionals in Bristol.
Right.
And I don't know, you and I, were we doing the show in 2017 when that was going on?
The end of 2017.
Okay. So, yeah. Okay. So we hadn't gotten into full swing yet. So for those who don't know the background, there was a Goffstown Rhode Island game in the in the regional finals. And what it resulted in
last Saturday.
I'm going to 2017. So okay. We'll go further back.
Okay.
And at that point in time, there was a substitution problem on Goffstown's side where they didn't bat everybody. And for those who don't know, in Little League, you have minimum player requirements. You're required to, if you have 13 on the roster, everybody gets an at-bat. And there are many more complicated substitution things, but that's the biggest one to consider. Well, they had, depending on who you listen to, either a player didn't want to go in or the coach messed up the substitution pattern with whatever. It doesn't matter. There was this hue and cry from the ESPN crew, particularly Carl Ravitch, about, I was out in California at that point in time. My wife had a business meeting and I'm staying in this hotel and I go back up to the room and I flip on ESPN and I'm like, oh my God, like, why are they talking about Goffstown? And it turned into this big thing. And, then there were rules changed so that to protect the coaches and protect the players and all that sort of stuff. Well, there are other rules that exist too. And again, this past week, there was a Rhode Island Goffstown game. And what happens there? You see a Rhode Island player leading off a second base, clapping his hands, and then doing what appears to be flipping a signal in front of his helmet. Now, the only camera angle that it looked like they had on him was the center field camera. So you can't, all you see is the left hand go up. The umpire immediately calls time, brings the Rhode Island coach over, talks to him, talks to the player, whatever. It was the reason I referenced the 2017 Goffstown issue there is in 2019, now we're assuming that it's rogue players who are making a mistake and acting alone. Whereas in 2017, we were so quick to, like, literally, it was like a minutes long screed from Carl Ravitch about the demise of youth sports. And this is what's wrong in youth sports. Well, I'm willing to bet that a 12-year-old kid isn't just sort of coming up with the idea, hey, I'm just going to pick a sign from the catcher and flash the sign.
Yeah, it's something that you would think the team would talk about. Coaches would tell the players, hey, the catcher's not hiding the signs. If you see something and you want to make a signal to the batter, this is going to give us an edge. I mean, baseball players steal signs all the time.
Right.
And it, as you get older,
you get subtle.
You get subtle, and it's a skill. I mean, if you can steal the other team's signs and you can relay them to your player and it gives you an edge, Major League Baseball teams will try to do this all the time.
And, okay, but in Major League Baseball, which has a book full of unwritten rules, that this is how you should and shouldn't comport yourself after you've done this, Major League Baseball doesn't have a rule outlawing sign stealing.
Right, that's the difference.
What it does have is there are things that you can't do. I mean, you can't sit there and flash something up on the scoreboard so that, hey, curveball's coming next. You can steal signs, but you have to be discreet about it.
Right. You're supposed to steal them discreetly and then communicate them discreetly to your team. You can't use technology to do it. It's part of the fabric of the game, but it's not specifically outlawed.
As it is in Little League.
As it is in Little League. That's the difference. So when it happens in Little League at the regional with a chance to go to Williamsport in the Little League World Series, that's why it can become a little bit more of a controversy when the kids are, it looks like, obviously, apparently, stealing signs and then relaying them to their teammates.
Yeah, and of course, in the case of the Goffstown team, the Goffstown team was the one that knocked Bedford out in the state championship. And you and I did one of the games between Goffstown and Bedford. Great game, very well played. Patrick Follis was on the mound, did a wonderful job for Bedford in that one. Goffstown wound up winning the next two and sealed the state title. But at that point in time, if you're any of us, what do you want to see? You want to see, like, I want to see a New Hampshire team going to Williamsport. Like, hey, you know, these are kids, if I'm watching and I'm seeing Adam LaFond or Maddox Turk or whoever, yeah, it's not going to be the same as if I'm seeing Matt Ulisney and Henry Dubois and Patrick Follis. Like, it's not going to be the same as if I'm seeing those guys. But still, like, there's a thrill of these guys are the next town over. Like, there's value in that. And yeah, Rhode Island won. And as Pat Dutton, the coach of Goffstown, said, hey, they beat us on the field. Like, I don't want to get caught up in whether we won the game. They didn't win. They scored more runs than we did. They won the game. But it's the how, and then kind of the, we would never do something like that.
Yeah, it's you
want, as I put my hands up, I'm like a walking emoji.
Yeah, there's so much that goes into it. The Rhode Island coaches in these articles that we've seen seem to feign ignorance and act like they had no understanding, no involvement, nothing happened. But the video is pretty clear with the guy on second base looking around the pitcher and then making a signal with his arm. It looked a lot like he was relaying signs. But you're right. The Goffstown coach came out and said, you know, they were the better team. Hats off to them. But at the same time, you want the best team to win, but you just want the game to be played the right way where the rules are followed.
Right.
And so he's just making a point and saying, you know, the rules weren't followed. And this team from Rhode Island apparently had engaged in this sign-stealing behavior in multiple games before this game. So, you know, he's just saying, hey, if the rules are on the books, why are they there if they're not going to be enforced?
Right. And that's really the long and the short of it. So there's always going to be a little bit of controversy. You know, that sort of stuff never ends. But anyway, and by the way, this is the 26th anniversary of the Bedford team that was national runners-up in Williamsport way back when. I talked to Jeff Beyer about potentially getting Tommy on the show today and never followed up. So, but of course, Tommy threw a no-hitter against the team from the Bronx in one of those games. So, you know, congratulations to those guys. I know they always look back this time of year fondly, and a lot of them are still in contact with each other, as you would be. I mean, it's like, it's you were there as, were you a state champion or runner-up?
Runners up in Maine.
Those are your guys. You were together so long that there becomes really sort of this bond. And, you know, I saw it last week with Maggie's team two weeks ago with Maggie's team out in Illinois. Like, they forever, regardless of what happens, you run into somebody in an airport or, you know, in college or whatever. Like, we played together. We won a national championship together. Like, there's always that sort of bond that goes along with it. So, you know, a lot of fun and obviously, we wish all the players who are in Williamsport this week nothing but a great, memorable experience. And, you know, it's always tough to watch the kids when things don't go their way. They get a little bit teary because there's a lot of pressure and there's TV cameras and this has been all summer and all your eggs are in this basket. But think about how far you've come. Like, you have a lot for all of those kids. You have a lot to be proud of regardless of where you're from. So we have what? 3 minutes basketball. Is Boogie Cousins the most star-crossed person on the planet?
Oh, like, it seems like he has become.
It's not sprained ankles. It's not tweaked calf. It's not anything. It's like he's playing bad injury bingo.
Yeah, this isn't right. You're not. Oh, he's out for 2 or 3 weeks. That's unfortunate. He didn't get to play a full season. It's, let's see if we can get every major injury to the lower half of the body within a 3-year span.
Right.
Let's blow out the Achilles. Let's fight back, get on the court. Let's tear our quad.
Yep.
Let's fight back, and then let's tear our ACL in the summer trying to get ready for the next season.
I think the sprained ankle is the free space, so he may have bingo soon. I mean, you would have to figure there's microfracture surgery somewhere along the line. He's going to be the first person under the age of 35 to have a total knee replacement. Like, just bad.
Yeah, it's too bad because now you look at the Lakers in the upcoming season, and they're still going to be very good with LeBron and Davis. But that would have been a lot of fun to watch, that front court, those three guys together, Anthony Davis and Cousins reunited, and they're in the same building as Kawhi and Paul George, Lakers, Clippers. I mean, that, you know, that game is going to be on Christmas, and wouldn't it be fun to see him as part of that rivalry? It just would have taken it to the next level,
yeah,
to have all those guys playing.
And he really is a gifted player. Great passer, good defensive play. Like, he's a guy who, without injury, I mean, Hall of Famer.
Yeah,
I would say
if
so.
If he had stayed healthy, you know, when he was healthy and on Sacramento, he was considered one of the five best players in the NBA. Absolutely, you know, worst case scenario, top 10. But he's a big, strong guy, and he hasn't stayed healthy now with these injuries. And it just puts a lot more strain on his body because he has so much muscle to try and rehab and get his speed back. So, yeah, it's a shame just for a guy with that much skill to not be able to be out on the court.
So we certainly wish him a speedy recovery. I mean, the nice thing is an ACL isn't quite what it used to be. You know, the rehab is the hardest part. The surgery is the easier part. So, and then last but not least, our favorite non-NBA basketball or non-NBA and NCAA basketball tournament, the basketball tournament, won by a bunch of Buckeyes.
Yeah, the Ohio State guys, they got the title, the $2 million prize, winner take all. And they saw a lot of names that you would recognize from college basketball a few years back, Kraft and Leidy and Buford, all these Ohio State Buckeyes that played together. Now a lot of them are playing overseas. So they come back together, and Kraft is wreaking havoc down the stretch with steals and assists. And then they have to make two free throws to win the $2 million. And Buford steps up the line and does it. I mean, you talk about pressure free throws, but that's what you get with the Elam ending. You get these pressure situations, and lots of times it's the buzzer beating shot or the, you know, target score hitting shot. But in this case, it was two free throws to win $2 million. He stepped up the line and knocked them down.
I love that every game has a walk off. Like, hey, it's just built that way. And I don't know that the NBA will ever go there. I would love for them to go there. I don't think they ever will, because like, it makes fans stay. It makes excitement where all of a sudden somebody goes ice cold and you're down 20, and the next thing you know, because you're not playing against the clock anymore. You're playing against a score, and any substitution patterns may go completely out the door at that point because, hey, those guys have been sitting on the bench getting cold. Well, this thing's getting close now. You better get them out of mothballs. So,
yeah, there's so much strategy that goes into it. You know, how do you try to set the target score? Do you call timeout? Do you try to get the ball when it starts, or do you try to score again before the target score is set? But then either way, when the target score has been set and the clock is turned off, the whole idea is now you don't have all the fouling to try and get back in the game.
Right.
Because you don't want the other team to be able to tack on one or two while you get three, because before you know it, they'll hit the target score.
Which makes it far more watchable. So anyway, thank you to our guest, my older kid. Thank you to everybody here at the studio for all their hard work. Harry Kozlowski, Bill Jennings, Colin Richardson. And thank you to you for listening. Have a great sports week. If you can find a way to extend summer, I'm all for it. I'm all ears. So we'll catch you soon. You've been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.